Here's another She Unlimited podcast. She Pods are here for you to laugh, listen, and learn with. So sit back and enjoy.
Ooh, wow, I ask myself that every day. I really do. I really do. I get up in the morning, I go out onto the porch, I sit down with my computer, and I basically ask that question. But I would say, you know, so every day is a little bit different. But let me make a compilation for you of
okay.
what I think Deborah is. Stories are pretty much my life. I'm known for the instrument that I play, which is the harp, but not your grandmother's harp. It's an unusual instrument. It's an instrument that I had built for me, which is like, if an electric guitar and a harp fell in love, and they had one child, that's basically what I play, which is a solid body electric Celtic harp. What I'm known for and what I am are probably two kind of different things, because people pretty much see that the facade of this wild woman on the stage with this wild-looking instrument, with this wild-looking harp, which they think of harp as being so sedate. And who I really am, I think, is someone who is intensely curious. I'm really, really interested in the whole idea of where creation comes from and where invention comes from, which is why I called my last big project, which is this DVD and now a public television special, why I called it Invention and Alchemy, because I love the idea of we can just go to that. That would probably say it in a nutshell, invention and alchemy. To me, that is, invention means ideas, you know, the soul of things, and alchemy, which is bringing things to life. So, or in my mind, it means bringing things to life. So that's what I'm about, is about having ideas or stories, and then how do I bring them alive, using music and using myself, and oftentimes on stage. How does that work?
That is just perfect. Now, what got you into playing the harp in the first place?
It's not like I was a kid and I wanted to play the harp. That was not the case. In fact, my first instrument was the ukulele, which is much more practical, easily to carry around. But I had lessons on everything when I was a kid, because my parents knew that I was obviously fascinated by music, but you got to understand that my parents actually, music is in a sense my first language. My parents courted each other by singing to each other. Doesn't that sound romantic?
Very interesting, yes.
Yes, but it is really romantic, but not necessarily something I would recommend, because although they could sing together, they actually never learned to have a conversation. So, you know, they were actually divorced very early in my life. The beautiful thing was that music and singing was the thing that connected me with them. And you know what, Gary? I've forgotten your question now.
I was just curious.
Remember it?
I was curious how you got into
it. Oh, how did I
start
with the harp? Right, you know, it's really funny because I do a lot of interviews, and I had this sign up on my board that says, goal for today's interview, remember the questions. So I'll try to remember. So the harp, when I was a kid, they knew that I loved music. I loved writing stories and making music with it. And so they were like, oh, gee, I guess we'll give her piano lessons. But I didn't like piano lessons. And they're like, oh, well, I guess we'll give her guitar lessons. So they tried all these instruments, including the harp. And then finally realized I didn't like lessons. I wasn't really interested in being a player. I wanted to invent music. I wanted to bring these stories alive. So once they figured that out, they just kind of left me alone, rented a piano, put it in my room, let me write stories and put music to them. But then when I got to college, my college needed a harp player, and I knew how to tune the harp.
Ah.
That made me the expert. And at that point, what happened is there was a teacher who really figured out how to psych me out, and she realized that if she put enough challenges in front of me, I would not even be thinking about the harp. I would just be going for that challenge. So she just kind of like, it's like if you were trying to get a little kid to go up a hill and you put an M&M every 2 feet, you know, and that they'd follow along the M&Ms. That's what she did. She put little challenges in front of me to kind of pull me along. And before I knew it, I was playing the instrument. And in the beginning, You know, I actually became fascinated. I thought, like, wow, I could be like a normal musician if I played the harp, because I'd just been a, you know, composer and an inventor of music. And I thought, like, God, I could fit in, like, and be a real girl if I played the harp. You know, so at that point, I was really trying to, I thought, like, I could fit in because the harp had this really nice girl image. And let this be a lesson to all of us. If you're, you know, if your spirit is not the spirit of, you know, a nice, quiet girl, you know, it doesn't matter what instrument you play, your spirit, if you let it go, is going to infuse whatever you do, which is what ended up happening. Instead of the harp being able to sort of, tame me, which was my, what I hoped at first, it was like, please tame me, Mr. Harp. Eventually what happened is I had to be who I was. And so the harp ended up having to come along with me and totally change in order to express what I need to express, which is, you know, from tender to totally bombastic. So that is how I ended up playing the harp. And, you know, at first, you know what a normal harp looks like, is this huge golden instrument. That was exciting, but after a while, I wanted to be able to move around and dance. And so then I had to convince one of the harp builders to build me a harp that I could strap on and walk around, and that's the instrument that I play today.
What's that thing weigh?
And it's fun. It's great that you should ask. It weighs about 18 pounds, but we've been talking because I was like, you know, this is really just too heavy. And they were like, ah, but Deborah, it must be, they're French. This is what we need for, and I said, look, you're in France, you got to talk to the bicycle makers. Because, you know, there's this, and so they were like, oh, this is wonderful. And so now the harp builders are getting together with the bicycle builders in France, and they're building me a what they're calling an ultralight harp, so that I can even be more comfortable wearing it. And I love that. I love the connection of the bicycle. Well, I love connections in general, and the idea of such a practical thing as a bicycle connecting with, such a sort of fantastical thing as a harp, that their connection will make the harp work better for me. I just love that.
And they're expressing themselves creatively as well.
Yes, yes. And, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, going back to invention and alchemy again, and I keep coming back to this because it's not just the name of the DVD that I just finished, but and this TV show, but it's also really sort of a concept for my life. Alchemy is also about collaboration. And what, you know, I've always been fascinated by when it comes to human beings and human endeavor, one and one does not equal two. You know, you put one person together with another person and their effort is more than doubled in many ways. And especially when you're talking about creative things, once two people start thinking together, you know, one and one can equal anything, like not even a number, you know, something beyond a number. And so being able to work with the builders is great, and being at the beginning of the development of this instrument allows me to have input into how the instrument is even built.
So you would say that you have an entertainment production as opposed to just a musical production in what you're doing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I tell stories with music, and that was why it was so important that my last project, it actually got a Grammy nomination, which was great. I mean, the CD got a Grammy nomination, which was wonderful, but the CD was only half of it because my show is very visual. I really love to talk to the audience and be in front of the audience. And, you know, this comes from when I was a kid. My mother was an amazing performer who would bring, this is another going back to alchemy, she would bring stories to life right in front of us, you know, stories from opera or a nursery rhyme or whatever it was. And that's what I love to do. That's what I love to do in a show. And that's one reason that I struggle to be as authentic as possible in a show and to let myself express as much as possible, because if I can do that, then in the show, the story and the idea really come to life. And to me, that is magic. When a performer is in front of an audience with nothing else but brings this whole story and scene and experience to life for everyone. And that's what I love to do.
Well, I'll tell you, we're sitting thousands of miles apart. I can't see you, but yeah. I can feel you because
great.
You do bring things
good.
To life. It's very interesting. Very interesting.
I wonder what it is. Is it the sound of my voice, or is it? And I don't know that you can answer the question. Isn't that fascinating? And you know, I noticed that in books too. You know, a book can. You know, I've read books that those characters become part of my life, part of my experience, and yet other books don't. You know, what is it? And I'm fascinated by that. And I'm actually doing a project with the Cambridge Science Festival, working with scientists. Not like we're going to experiment on me, but what we're looking for is what is invention? You know, what is that spark that we all have, not just a scientist, not just a musician, but every single person, a housewife, you know, that, you know, a secretary, a doctor, that moment when you come up with an idea or you connect with whoever it is, whether it's, you know, your patient or whether it's your child or whether it's an audience, you know, or whether it's a scientific idea, how do you get there? You know, and can we help each other? Can scientists and musicians work together to kind of push each other into new areas? So, you know, this idea keeps coming back again in invention and alchemy, you know, the idea and the magic.
Well, I'll tell you, part of it is your voice, but it's also the way you use your voice, the words you choose, how you speak.
Well, that's really interesting. And of course, I'm not aware of it because I'm just trying to connect with you, which is hopefully, you know, what I'm doing in performance as well with my instrument, which is an extension of my voice. I mean, that's one really beautiful thing about playing an instrument for many years. And it's another connection with science is that I often think of an instrument as a prosthesis, meaning I was so, when I was a kid, one of the first women who I met who was sort of a hero in my life was the postmistress. And not only did she have this important job as a postmistress, but she had a wooden leg. And so she was just like completely exotic to me. And that also made me fascinated with the whole idea of how she could walk like this. This is wonderful to me. And then I started meeting musicians that had, you know, only four fingers or something like that. And I started realizing, wait a minute, you know, there's these, first of all, we don't need all the things, you know, we don't need all of our fingers in order to be great musicians. And there are these extensions that that allow us to go beyond our physical limits. Either physically, you know, like she didn't have a leg, but she had a wooden leg so she could walk around. My voice I'm speaking to you now doesn't sound like a harp, but when I put the harp on, I can go to areas of expression or, you know, move into place I can't without it. And some people are like, ooh, that's a terrible example, but for me it's just, I love that how the instrument becomes a part of you. Something that was originally foreign, whether it's a wooden leg or whether it's your instrument, becomes not just, it allows you to actually reach beyond without it. Does that make any sense?
Perfect sense. I can tell why your shows are so popular, because you're sharing your life.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. That's certainly why I go to a show. I want to, I don't think any of us want to sit there and say like, wow, she's talented. I mean, like, that doesn't really matter. I think you want to go to get some kind of revelation, some kind of greater understanding of your own life or how to, you know, how to do your life. And that is certainly what I go to a show for. And I think the only way we can do that with each other is to actually just be authentic and just try to communicate and just try to reach out through whatever we have, you know, and really, it's funny because my best friend, I mean, here, my best friend is a housewife. And I'm, you know, so like, I'll be out playing in a 17,000 street, you know, person stadium, and she'll be running the Zamboni at the ice skating rink. but when we talk to each other, we're having similar experiences. And it is not at all like we can't relate to each other. We find the common element in my playing in a 17,000 people and her, dealing with her kids' school. And there are those common elements. And I think we're, you know, when we go to see performers, we're really looking for them to help us reflect, I think, or to help us, show something. I mean, that's why I read a book, to see. I'm searching for clues about this life. And I think we're all searching for clues, and we all have clues for each other.
You talk about being in a 17,000-seat theater, but each one of those people is making an individual connection with you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it was really funny because when that was, like, I was in a stadium, and it was the first time I'd played in a stadium, and it actually felt so much more freeing. And it reminded me of when I was a little kid, when I used to, not a little kid, like a young teenager, and I would go out, we lived out in the country, and I would put the stereo on full, and I'd go out into the driveway, and I'd pretend that the trees were this audience, and, you know, I'd sing at the, you know, top of my lungs, and there was this freedom that I think sometimes when we get on stage, or the performer gets on stage, you're afraid to, like, let people see you doing that because it's embarrassing. But in fact, that's what we want to see, because that's what we connect with. And somehow playing in this huge stadium connected me more to that experience of being a child than other experiences had. But of course, now I get to take that with me. And what you said about connecting with individuals, that's really important to me. I noticed earlier on in my career that after some performances I'd be depressed and after some performances I'd be up. And I couldn't figure out what the difference was until I realized that in the performances where I felt great, I could see the audience, even if just a little bit. I could actually look at them and make eye contact. And ever afterwards, I specified that the lights have to be just up a little bit so they know I can see them, and I know they can see me because we're going on a journey together.
That is awesomely cool. That is neat.
Thank you. And I think that comes across in this DVD. I've watched it, and there's this one song that I love. It's called Congratulations, You Made It This Far, which was a song I wrote for my 40th birthday. And right in the middle of the song, my brother was in the audience, and I was able to look right at him and sing directly to him. And when I go back and look at the DVD, that moment becomes sort of, I'm galvanized to that moment because I see me look like completely connecting with one person. And that seems, I don't know, I love that.
I'll bet every time you watch it, your heart almost skips a beat when you see that part.
You know, yes, it does. And actually, to be honest, one of the reasons it does is because in that moment, I look so much like my mother that it's very moving. It's kind of embarrassing, but that is true. I mean, you know, my mother was like the first star for me, and she was this incredible performer who never got famous and felt like a complete failure. And you know, I bought that. You know, she told me, you know, she was like, she kind of felt like a failure, and I bought that idea until one day I thought, wait a minute. Are we saying that success is only based on the quantity of people who you've moved in your life? Because this woman moved me and some other people I know in such an amazing way, and that is incredibly successful. So she was wrong. She wasn't a failure. She was an amazing success. And I will bet that, you know, a lot of people go around thinking they haven't made that connection when they really have.
You move one person, your life is a success. That's exactly right.
Yeah, and you know, and I don't know. I mean, when I hear that on their own, sorry, when I hear someone say that, I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, but it's true.
It definitely is.
Yeah, and of course, you know, that doesn't mean you want to stop. I mean, but that's also what's so wonderful about hearing the stories of moving people. And when people come to me and tell me, you know, some friend of mine from junior high school will come and he'll say, you know, I saw your mother sing once and it changed my life. It, you know, blew the roof off of what the level of art I thought could be in my world. And I think that's another really important thing for me, since I grew up with this incredible level of art in my living room. I would love it that people can have that. That's another reason I wanted to make this DVD, was to bring it into people's living room, but in a personal way. And again, not like, hey, look how good this is, but hey, this is here to speak to you. This is part of your life, your heritage, you know, the voice that you have. Even if you don't play this instrument or work with this orchestra, you have a voice as well.
So what's on the horizon for you?
Well, we just, I'm really excited because we made the DVD and then we re-edited it for television. So it's just started airing on public television. And we got the Grammy nomination for it, which was really great. And now I simply want to do more. I want to, you know, this was a 2-year project, and I want to be doing more projects like this where I'm mixing stories and music. And, you know, if I had a dream, it would be to have a one-woman show on Broadway. I love doing one-woman shows. So it's more performing, more recording, and, you know, going on from this point. You know, I wanted to make sure that I tell people where they can see more about me, which is my website, which is hipharp.com. Hip, H-I-P-H-A-R-P. That's not hipharp.
And also on MySpace?
That's right. Also on MySpace. And also on She Unlimited, right?
That's right. You betcha.
That's right.
Fantastic. Thank you, Deborah. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, it's been a... Thank you so much. I really, really enjoyed this.
Me too. Thank you very much. And actually, why,
you're welcome.
Where can we get your DVD if people want to order your DVD? Right off of your website?
The website is fine. Amazon.com is fine. The great thing about getting it from my website is that if I'm around, people can actually get it signed. And they can also go to my website and there, click somewhere, you can click there and actually see sort of clips from the DVD and photos so that they can get an idea what it's like.
Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts and your voice with She Unlimited. It's greatly appreciated. Until next time, I'm Gary Connolly, and you're tuned into SheePods on the She Unlimited Network.